Thank you. Our next presentation is titled, Is Falls Risk an Independent Contributor to Everyday Problem Solving as Measured by the EPT and Community Blind Seniors? Please note that there has been a slight title change to the one that you have on your handout. And the program and the presenters are Lindsay, Barb, and Sarah.
So good morning, everyone. Thanks for being here. I'm Barb, this is Lindsay and Sarah, as you all know. And we're just going to be presenting on this topic. We performed a pilot study that we worked on under the supervision of Teresa Lee Ambrose. And I'll just start by giving you a bit of a background. The increase in our society's aging population is an issue of extreme importance in the healthcare profession. One reason for this, which forms the basis of our research, is the increased incidence of falls that accompanies aging. 30% of those 65 years of age will experience one or more falls, and over 65, sorry, with the consequences being a decreased quality of life for the individual, as well as an unsustainable burden on the healthcare system. The direct cost of medical care associated with falls in Canada exceeds $2.4 billion. Many risk factors for falls have been identified, including increasing age, decreased ability to participate in activities of daily living, muscular weakness, balance problems, medications, past and current level of physical activity, functional limitations, and visual impairments. A study by Stevens and Olson in 2000 suggests that falls are caused by both intrinsic or personal factors, such as problems with gait and balance, and extrinsic or environmental factors, such as household clutter or stair railings, and it's often the interaction between these factors that results in a fall. Impaired cognition has also been identified as a key risk factor for falls. Those with cognitive impairments are 2 times more likely to experience a fall than those with normal cognition. Impaired cognition has also been shown to prospectively predict falls in community dwelling and nursing home residents. Another important element to consider with respect to falls risk is executive functioning. Executive functions are the higher order cognitive processes that control, integrate, and fine-tune more basic mental functions. There are several sub-processes which collectively encompass executive functioning, and researchers often break down executive functioning into the sub-processes when examining it. So for example, a cognitive task such as set shifting, working memory, dual tasking, planning, organizing, and self-monitoring are all considered sub-processes that collectively encompass executive function. However, there's no consistency among researchers in determining those independent yet interrelated sub-processes. It is also important to note that research indicates there can be impaired executive functioning without impaired global cognition. This is significant as many seniors may not demonstrate a global cognitive impairment, but could be suffering from executive functioning deficits, and that has been shown to decrease the ability to cope independently at home. Therefore, a global assessment of cognition may not provide appropriate insight into true cognitive processing ability. Throughout the literature, there's well-established relationship between poor executive function and falls risk among the elderly population. One study by Nevin et al. In 1991 showed that subjects with a long trail B making time, which is a measure of the subprocess of planning, organizing, and attentional flexibility, were at a greater risk of a major fall-related injury. Lord and Fitzpatrick in 2001 found that within the elderly population, those with a history of falls performed poorly on the trail making B as compared to non-fallers. Another study by Rapport et al. In 1998 studied the use of executive function tests in predicting falls in an inpatient rehabilitation population and determined that response inhibition and behavioral perseverance, which are 2 sub-processes of executive function, were strong predictors of falls. Further studies by DeFabio Louis Ambrose in 2007 and 2008, and Anastoy in 2009 consistently show that impaired executive function is associated with an increased falls risk in seniors. So, although an established relationship exists between impaired executive function and falls risk, the literature has not yet examined the independent contribution of falls risk to overall global executive functioning. So what is global executive functioning? It can be represented through the ability to problem solve. Instrumental activities of daily living draw from the sub-processes of executive functioning. For example, the problem-solving skills used to manage medications, make changes to diet and lifestyle, and follow up with healthcare professionals require the collective use of executive functions. Observation and self-report have been used to measure global executive function. However, these methods have several limitations which impede their usefulness. Self-reports typically only represent each domain of sub-processing by asking one general question related to that domain, such as, can you take your own medication, which is inadequate to assess competence within that domain. Studies by Ford et al. In 1988 and Myers in 1993 showed that older adults also often overestimate their functional competence. Also, self-reporting provides little insight into the causes behind the difficulties with functional tasks. For example, problems with meal preparation could be due to sensory deficits or lack of manual dexterity, or could be the result of cognitive decline. And then as for observational tests, these can be very time-consuming for both training the administrator and administering the test. Therefore, they may be of little use in a clinical situation. Another test which measures global executive function is the Everyday Problems Test. It provides an objective measurement of an individual's ability to problem solve in seven different domains that are deemed critical to independent living. These domains include meal preparation and nutrition, medication use and health behaviors, telephone use, shopping, financial management, household management, and transportation. DL et al. In 1995 found the reliability of the EPT to be 0.94, with a test retest reliability of 0.94. And with respect to validity, the EPT is significantly related to both self ratings on IADLs as well as spousal reports of IADLs. So a better understanding of the relationship between global executive functioning and falls risk could provide clinicians better insight into the challenges of independent living faced by seniors at risk of falling. The purpose of this study was to examine the relationship between global executive function and falls risk. We will use the EPT to assess global executive function and determine the independent contribution of falls risk on EPT scores. It is hypothesized that an increased falls risk will correlate with lower scores on the EPT and therefore with decreased global executive function.
So now that Barb has outlined the background of why we're doing our study and exactly what our study is looking at, I'm going to take a closer look at the methods for our cross-sectional analysis as well as the results that we found. So to start off with our participants, the subjects obtained for this cross-sectional analysis were drawn from a larger study conducted by Louis Ambrose et al. 2010 entitled Resistance Training in Executive Functions, a Randomized Control Trial. The study is also known as the Brain Tower Study. This study looked at the effects of once a week versus twice a week resistance training on cognitive performance and executive function. Of the 155 participants that were randomized at baseline for the Brain Power Study, 101 of those subjects completed the EPT, the Everyday Problems Test, which is the dependent variable of interest in our study. Data from those 101 subjects was used to create the sample for our cross-sectional analysis. Due to the fact that our participants were a subset of the Brain Power Study, the same inclusion and exclusion criteria applied. All subjects were generally healthy, community-dwelling seniors living in Vancouver and were between the ages of 65 and 75. They were also all women. To be included in this study, subjects had to have a MMSE score of greater than or equal to 24, which is indicative of no cognitive impairment. As well, they had to have a visual acuity of 20 over 40 with or without glasses. Subjects were excluded from the study if they had a current condition in which exercise was contraindicated, if they had participated in a resistance training program within the last 6 months, if they had a neurodegenerative disease or had had a stroke, if they were depressed, if they did not speak or understand English fluently, if they were taking cholinesterase inhibitors or on estrogen or testosterone therapy. So now we'll take a look at the descriptive variables for this study. So the descriptive variables for this study are as follows: age, years of school, global cognition, and mood. Age and years of school were measured in years and based on self-report. Global cognition was assessed using the MMSE. The MMSE evaluates orientation, memory, attention, ability to name, and ability to follow verbal and written commands, as well as the ability to write a sentence and copy a polygon. The maximum score on the MMSE is 30. scores of greater than or equal to 24 are indicative of no cognitive impairment. The MMSE has been established as a valid and reliable measure of global cognition and can differentiate between subjects with cognitive impairment and those without. Mood in this study was assessed using the 15-item geriatric depression scale. This is a modified version of the original geriatric depression scale. It is used to identify depression among the elderly population. It's a series of questions, and each question is answered with a yes or no response, based on how the subject felt over the last week. Scoring of greater than 5 on this scale is suggestive of depression. Research has shown that the 15-point geriatric depression scale is a valid and reliable measure of depression. So now that we've outlined the descriptive variables, we're going to take a little more in-depth look at our dependent variable of interest. Our independent variable was falls risk score. This was measured by the physiological profile assessment, also known as the PPA. It's a physiological profile used to determine subjects' falls risk. There are two forms of the PPA, a comprehensive version as well as a shorter screening version. Both versions produce the same overall falls risk score for a subject. For the purpose of this study, the screening version of the PPA was used. The version incorporates 5 validated measures of physiological functioning. First, visual contrast sensitivity, which was measured by Melbourne Edge test. Second is proprioception, which was measured by the lower limb matching test. Then they look at reaction time, determined by a finger response time to a light stimulus measured in milliseconds. They also look at isometric quad strength, which is measured using a spring gauge. 3 trials are performed using the subject's dominant leg, and the highest score is recorded. Finally, postural sway is also examined. A sway meter is put at the subject's waist level, with the subject standing on a piece of foam with their eyes open, and the amount of sway is measured in millimeters. So the data from these 5 tests is inputted into a computer software program to produce an overall falls risk score. Scoring is as followed. A score of less than 0 indicates that the subjects are at a low risk of falling. Scores between 0 and 1 are a mild risk, 1 to 2 moderate risk, and any score greater than 2 indicates that the subject is at a high risk of falling. The PPA has been shown to be both a valid and reliable measure of falls risk, and measurements have been found to predict those at risk of falling with a 75% accuracy in both community dwelling and institutional settings. Overall, the PPA score is used as the independent variable in this study. Now we'll take a look at the dependent variable. So the dependent variable within this cross-sectional analysis is executive functioning, and the Everyday Problems test was used to assess global executive functioning. In order to assess the global executive functioning, the EPT looks at 7 domains, which Barbara mentioned earlier, and they are as follows: medication use, shopping, transportation, meal preparation, telephone use, household management, and financial management. Within each domain, multiple questions are asked to obtain a more in-depth assessment of each domain. There are 2 versions of the EPT, an 84-question version as well as a 42-question version. For the purpose of this study, the 42-question version was used. As mentioned by Bart earlier, the EPT has been shown to be a reliable and valid measure of global cognition. Each participant within the study consented to perform the EPT. The EPT was administered by someone who had been trained in its use, and standard procedures were followed as outlined by the EPT manual. Points are given based on correct answers, and scores can be determined compared to normative data. Overall EPT scores were used as a dependent variable in this study. So taking a look at our statistical analysis, all data was analyzed using the SPSS Windows 17.0. In our study, we specifically wanted to determine if falls risk, as measured by the PPA, had an independent contribution to overall EPT scores and therefore global executive function. First, in association between variables, which were age, years of school, geriatric depression score, MMSE score, PPA score, and EPT scores, was determined by using the Pearson product moment coefficient. This allowed us to determine the variables to be introduced into the linear regression model. A multiple linear regression model was conducted to determine the independent contribution of falls risk on overall EPT scores. The following variables, geriatric depression score, MMSE score, age, and years of school were statistically controlled for in this model by entering them into the model first. So now let's take a look at what we found. So this is just a chart of our descriptive variables, and it outlines the mean values for each descriptive variable that we looked at within this analysis. What's important to note here is that the group of community dwelling seniors had a mean PPA score of 0.4. This indicates that our sample population was at a mild falls risk. So now taking a look at our correlation coefficients, the Pearson moment correlation was performed to determine the association between variables. A single-tailed t-test was performed to determine which variables were significantly associated with EPT score. Our results show that years of school, global cognition, and PPA score, or falls risk, were all associated with EPT scores, and they're just outlined there by the stars on this table. What we did find was that geriatric depression score and age were not shown to be significantly associated with EPT scores. All independent variables, as well as variables based on biological relevance, were entered into the multiple linear regression model. So this is just a table of our model. So if we take a look at the data from the linear regression model, age, years of school, MMSE score, and geriatric depression score together accounted for 21.8% of the variance of EPT scores. By adding PPA score, or falls risk, to the model, it resulted in an R2 change of 6.1%, which significantly improved the model as determined by the F change of 8.05. Due to the significant improvement in the model, PPA score is considered to independently contribute 6.1% of the variance in EPT scores. The total variance of the model, which included all the variables as well as falls risk, accounted for 27.9% of the variance in EPT scores. So I'm going to hand it over to Sarah to discuss what we just presented.
Okay, so I'm going to do the discussion, go a little more into depth about what we found, why we think we found this, why does anybody even care, and where we think the research should go from here. Okay, quick recap. So we found falls risk independently contributes global executive function as measured by the EPT. And to our knowledge, we are the first study that has examined the independent contribution of falls risk to global executive function in community dwelling older adults. Now I'm just going to do a brief comparison between the findings of our study and some of the other related studies out there. So first we're going to talk about some differences. So one of the differences in our study is the correlation between EPT score and geriatric depression or mood. So we found that there was no significant correlation between these two. This is in conflict with some findings by Conwiner, who in 2000 found that depression was a significant contributor to observed IADL performance. However, we think that this most likely why we didn't find this was because part of our exclusion criteria was we didn't include anybody with a clinical depression diagnosis. One of the other main differences between our study and the others out there was the correlation between EPT and age. So we found that there was, again, no significant correlation. So a study in 1995 by Marciski and Willis found age to actually account for 17% of the variance on the EPT. Again, our hypothesis about this is Marciski and Willis actually used a multivariate model to do their calculations. So this allows them to look at several different dependent variables within their study, and there will be interrelationships between these variables. So this allows those relationships. They may be significant when looked at a composite, but in our study, we actually used a univariate model. We just wanted to look specifically just at EPT score and age, and we just had the one dependent variable. It's also worth noting that despite our differing findings with age and EPT score, some other studies have also found no significant correlation. Again, Conwiner, although they were looking at observed IADL performance, but they also found no correlation with age. Similarities. So the main similarity between our study and the previous research is the association between falls risk and decreased executive functioning. And as mentioned before, because we are a pilot study, we weren't able to find any other studies that looked directly at falls risk as relates to EPT or IADLs. So now on to the novel finding of our study. So this is our big take-home moment here. So what we really found is that even a mild falls risk is associated with reduced everyday problem-solving ability. So this is pretty significant because previous research usually doesn't look at mild falls risk, they look at high falls risk going with decreased executive function or even fallers versus non-fallers. They don't take a look at those who are on the lower edge of the spectrum. Okay. And more importance here. So decreased score in the EPT has been shown to be representative of difficulties performing those instrumental activities of daily living. And this is well supported in the literature, studies by Boyle 2003, Bertrand 2001, Willis 1995. And what we also know is that competence in performing these IADLs is essential to independent living in the community. And the inability to adequately achieve these tasks has been associated with institutionalization, decreased quality of life, and increased mortality. And if you know what Barb was saying earlier, this is going to feed back into that unsustainable burden on our healthcare system. So obviously we think that this has some important clinical implications. So one of these implications is for screening. So because our results show that generally healthy seniors without a deficit in global cognition, because we use the MMSE as part of our inclusion criteria, they still show that association with a mild falls risk and decreased executive function. Therefore, we need a comprehensive executive function screening when working with this senior population. Because you can have those seniors come in, they look, you know, fine. This is a nice looking senior. Doesn't seem to be having any cognitive problems. But really, if you dig deeper, there might be a big deficit there. And again, so earlier identification of those struggling could lead to earlier interventions. Okay, so intervention. So typically with regard to interventions, and especially as physiotherapists, we tend to focus more on the physical barriers. So we're looking at things like balance, increasing strength, working on flexibility. And while these are all still very important goals, we also need to start thinking about the ability to problem solve, which as we've shown through the research, is crucial to living independently in the community. So as clinicians, we need to start thinking not just about the physical, but also cognition, what's going on in there. Okay. So as any study, we have a few limitations. Ours was a cross-sectional design, so just a quick snapshot of what's happening. So therefore, we're unable to establish causality or directionality. So we couldn't say that falls risk causes a decrease in executive function or vice versa. However, current evidence does suggest that reduced physical function and cognitive function are co-occurring conditions, so they happen at the same time. As well, we are limited by our population. So because we used a sample from the previous study, we were limited to generally healthy community-dwelling female seniors only, meaning that we can't generalize the findings of this study to the rest of the senior population. So lastly, a little bit about areas of further research. So as I mentioned before, we weren't able to establish that causality, and I think that would be a great place for further research to go. It would allow us to know more where we should start our intervention. Should we address the cognition first, or should we look at, again, keeping on that falls risk? Which one would be more effective? Again, with respect to the population used, we hope this study could be repeated with a more heterogeneous population so we could generalize, have a greater scope. And finally, we feel the feasibility of the EPT as a screening evaluation tool for clinicians is something to investigate further. So I've talked about how we need to screen this population for early intervention to see who's having those problems. But as of now, it's not really clear what would be the best tool for us as clinicians to use in order to do that. The EPT is reliable, it has great face validity, you can perform it in the clinic, but depending on your participant, it can be quite lengthy, there's no time limit. So that's just something we think should really be further explored. Okay, so thanks for taking the time to listen. Hope everyone learned something. Making it a little bit shorter would be good, because as we said before, with self-report it's often easy but it's not very accurate, and the observed involves either having a setup like a kitchen or something like that, or actually going into the participant's home, which can be quite invasive. So I think along the lines of a shorter, still questionnaire, but with more relevant questions than can you manage your medications.
And the one thing that we found with doing this research is that, like Barb said in the intro, a lot of the exams that are being done now in research focus on specific aspects of executive functioning, whereas the EPT itself kind of encompasses all those sub-processes and looks at global executive functions. So moving forward as clinicians, we probably want to steer towards a screening tool that kind of assess the global rather than focus on one specific aspect.
Yeah, I'm just wondering,
I had a question about the administration of the everyday problems test, because obviously if somebody's having cognitive problems, yes, I'm doing fine in transportation, yes, I can take my meds. How is that standardized?
So there's a set of specific questions asked about each domain. So for example, off the top of my head, instead of asking the open-ended questions, do you have problems with, it would be like, in this situation, what number would you call for an emergency? And then there's like 911, a local police, a fire department. So it actually assesses their ability to problem solve that specific task rather than just comment on how they feel that they're doing, or just a general statement.
So they're all sort of operational that way.
Okay. Yes.
And do they have to read it, or is it verbally presented?
It can be done both ways. It can be presented as they would read it and fill it out on a multiple choice, or an examiner can verbally produce the question and they would provide the response. So both operations, because it can be done in a large group setting, was how it was originally kind of designed, that you could do multiple subjects at once, where they would read it and fill it out, where in a more intimate setting with a patient one-on-one, you would be able to verbally provide them, but not allowing them with any cues. You can't cue them at all or anything like that in terms of like helping them with the answer. It's just a statement.
I have a question also. I mean, this is quite a confounded issue, isn't it? On the one hand, you've got the cognition influencing the falling risk, and then you've got falling risk influencing cognition. So my question would be, if you were to design a study to actually look at cause and effect, how would you construct that?
We did talk about this a little bit, and one of the things we thought, possibly not ideally, but would be taking a lengthy perspective over a long period of time, and then looking at perhaps what their baselines are and how they change over time and the trends toward that. Seeing, is there a greater change in their cognition? Is it a greater change in their falls risk? And looking that way might be an idea of getting a better understanding of the issue.
I think there are also some ways too of stratifying the data, for example, holding certain things constant, like having a low risk of falls and then, you know, sort of manipulating the different levels of falling risk, manipulating the different levels of cognition, and I think you get into some fancy statistical analyses that can help with that. I had a question regarding the scoring of the PPS. What's it, the physiologic? Was it PPS or
PPA?
PPA.
Yeah.
I think there might be a mistake on the slide in terms of the scoring because mild and moderate had the same score. Like you could have one in for both categories, so they're not mutually exclusive. So is it
should be
less than one, perhaps?
Less than one should be mild, and then one to two.
Because it would have
to be moderate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That would be good.
Okay. Any other questions from
you?
Yes.
Just back to the years of schooling. I can't remember quite what it fell under, but was that significant, or was it like how did that influence?
It was shown to be correlated with EPT scores. So higher years of schooling, higher.
What were the? Was it roughly like the? Were there levels, or what was the average? Did you guys look at that?
Not specifically, because we just entered it kind of into the model as all the variables, and we didn't look at years of school independently. And we just primarily focused on their fall risk growth.
Good question. Yes, go ahead.
Jesse, do you guys have any ideas? You said that, catching it early might lead to greater interventions or like the ability to treat. What do you feel the role of physiotherapists would be in that respect? Would you be looking to refer on to something, or would you be able to, like, how would that influence our practice besides just being aware of it? Do you guys have any ideas around that, or are there any studies that kind of brought in like that cognitive piece to our practice?
So I guess in terms of like interventions, the idea being that if they're kind of silently failing, like if their executive functions, their ability to cope at home, so if we're not seeing them in the home environment and we're seeing them in like a hospital or a private practice, you may not have an insight into that. Whereas screening for that, maybe able to target that, and like you said, refer on to maybe home care PTs that could actually provide them with things in their home that could actually help them cope better and then therefore increase quality of life and allow them to manage better and then hopefully keep them safe like within their home and prevent that institutionalization and mortality and morbidity that's kind of been reported by a lot of studies that happens when people fail their executive function.
So not specific cognitive executive function tasks like in progress.
Well, another thing, like because we're an interprofessional collaboration, like to be able to refer to an OT and say, you know, I've screened this person and it seems like the executive functioning is something that they're struggling with. That's something that they have a lot more training in and may be able to provide cognitive strategies with regards to executive functioning. You know, that's something that they're it's one of their bigger priorities as opposed to us with the kind of more physical aspects of falls.
This is more of a comment and a question. When I was at a seniors falls prevention program, it was very multidisciplinary. So when the OTs would screen them for fall risk using the MMSC, and then we would have them for falls balance training, and then they would also work part of a brain power group that actually helped to improve their cognition at the same time. So it's maybe a potential way of doing it.
Could you just expand a little bit the relationship of cognitive problems and judgment? One could explain increased risk of falling and actual falls. How do you explain the reverse? Your findings physiologically.
Thank you.
Well, I don't think that we, like, our study left us in a position where we still can't. Like, there's no causality or direction that we were able to decipher from our study. And that's the thing, is that as of now, no one's looked at it that way. So that's just...
Did you have any hypotheses? I mean, you've seen an association. Maybe it's, you know, maybe it's not. Maybe there isn't causality here. Maybe there's some intervening variable. But is there anything that you might think about that would suggest causality? I think trauma or
a distraction, maybe even. I'm not. Yeah.
A trauma could be. I think there are probably some things that one could argue and hypothesize there could be a causal link.
But this is people with a false risk that have never actually experienced a fall.
Okay.
Right.
So have they not?
Yeah. None of these people have experienced a fall. So, yeah. That's why it's...
Yeah, and they were generally healthy otherwise.
Okay.
Still had that mild fault
risk. The question about the everyday problems test, there doesn't seem to be any category or domain there for self-care, and I'm wondering why that might be. I mean, they were very important activities, but none actually related to self-care.
I think a lot of the self-care activities get characterized more in the... ADL spectrum, whereas these are a little more difficult, require a little more executive function, a little more problem-solving ability, and take it a little bit higher level, whereas a lot of things, brushing your teeth, being able to wash yourself, is a little bit, I don't want to say lower on the spectrum, and it's obviously not less important, but not as important as skill in terms of staying on your own independently within the community.
Any other remaining questions? If not, we will have to wait until...